You're listening to an iHeart podcast.
Crime Stories with Nancy Grace.
I will never forget the first time I had the twins at a playground and they wanted a bottle of water. We had been out, it was really hot, and I could see them from the car. So it may have been 50 feet. So they are at the top of a jungle gym, and I mean way up there, and they're going to get on a slide. So I walk to the car, grab the bottle of water, and turn around and see a stranger talking to John David and Lucy. They're about 3 years old, you know, this tall at the time. Well, I took off running with two bottles of water. I mean running straight for the guy, straight for him. And just as I was about to jump like they do on TV like that, the guy turned around and it was a friend of ours from church. And he said, "Hey, I didn't see you, so I thought I'd stand here and watch them till you got back." Well, he was that close to two black eyes and a bloody nose. Why? Because children go missing from playgrounds, ballparks, malls, amusement parks. Why? In this day and age, why? And what can we do to stop it? Let's start with the true story of Gabriella Gabby Doolin. Listen.
Her little friend came back to her and she said, "Amy, have you saw Gabby? I can't find her."
Gabby Doolin's older brother was playing football when she went missing from the campus of Allen County Scottsville High School. The game stopped and everyone, including her father, searched high and low for the seven-year-old. Brian says he saw a lot of people during that search, but one face sticks out in particular.
When I saw him walking up the fence, it was dark. I couldn't tell who it was originally. And I hollered. I was asking a lot of people that night who they were. I mean, yeah. I thought he was helping me search.
You're hearing our friend Monique Blair at Fox 56 Lexington with me, an all-star panel, to try to break it down and put it back together. What happened to Gabby? What happens to so many children at playgrounds, parks, ballparks? Gabby Doolin, a little seven-year-old girl with her parents, they're watching her older brother play ball. And just after the action starts, Gabby's missing. With me, as I said, an all-star panel. Mark Class, the father of Polly Class, who goes missing from her own home. Mark Class, the founder of Class Kids Foundation. Wendy Patrick, California prosecutor, author, Red Flag, host, Live with Dr. Wendy, KCBQ Radio. Karen Stark, renowned psychologist, joining us out of Manhattan at KarenStark.com. Joseph Scott Morgan, professor of forensics, Jacksonville State, author of Blood Beneath My Feet, and the star of Poisonous Liaisons. Levi Page, CrimeOnline.com investigative reporter, and 36 years Seattle PD. Author of Seattle's Forgotten Serial Killer, Gary Jean Grant, Cloyd Steiger at CloydSteiger.com. Joe Scott Morgan, right there, a crowded football game, a lot of young children, like between 1 and let's just say 12 years old, a lot of them in uniform and cheerleading uniforms, all looking alike, crowded stands. What do you do when you hear Gabby's missing?
It goes into a complete panic at that moment in time, because you know that, you know, there's parents out there. They know that feeling, that kind of feeling down deep in your gut where you know that sinking feeling that something is wrong. You can hear the stress in their voice. So everything goes chaotic in that moment because you're trying to find this little lost child. You can hear it. It's building like this. You know, and before this, Nancy, everybody's attention is probably on the ball field. They're not watching everything else. And where there's families, there's smaller children. They come to see their brothers and sisters play ball and sports and this sort of thing. So not all the time are the parents focused on the kids. And unfortunately, that's what happened in this case.
And in just minutes, isn't it true, straight up to you, Levi Page, CrimeOnline.com investigative reporter, that the team had hardly started playing before Gabby went missing? Do I have my timing right?
Yes, Nancy, you're correct. It's 7:40 p.m., November 14th, 2015, and Gabby was playing with her friends around the bleachers. They were playing hide-and-seek. Started out very normal, and then she vanishes. Her friends approach her mother and say, "We can't find Gabby," and a search ensues.
You know, and how common is that? Cloyd Steiger, 36 years, Seattle PD, including homicide, and author. Cloyd Steiger, how many times do you let your children go play with their friends and you look away? I, even knowing this, lull myself into a false sense of complacency, and I've done it.
Yeah, you do. And, you know, fortunately, it's actually very rare. But I mean, when it happens, there's nothing worse. It's every parent's worst nightmare. And you got to, you know, I had small children. I have grandchildren now, and I'm always constantly trying to see where they are when we're at one of these events. Like I said, it's every parent's worst nightmare.
Well, what do you do? What do you do in this case? What do you do when you realize you can't find your child?
Well, you have to start searching immediately. And, you know, you have to go, you know, it depends on, where you're at. If you're in a store, obviously you tell somebody in the store so they can lock
it
down.
But in this case, you're at a football game. The case has just started. And you heard Levi Page say it was 7-something p.m. It's dark or just getting dark. And that adds a whole nother complexity, Mark Class, to finding the baby.
Well, Nancy, what I would do, I mean, given a little time to reflect on this, is number one, you would want to send somebody out to the parking lot to check on any cars that may be leaving at the beginning of the game. That might be a tell right there. But the high-tech solution is you arm your child with some kind of tracking gear. Now, that could be something as simple as a smartphone. You can track smartphones very easily and very clearly. So you could have your young daughter with a little backpack and a smartphone in the backpack. And there are a lot of other types of devices that are made specifically to be able to track young children. So I think that is something that people should definitely consider, because as has been pointed out, there is no way on earth you can keep your eye on a child 24/7, particularly when you're in the middle of a rambunctious kind of an event like a football game, where you've got a child on the field, you've got a child in the bleacher.
Crime Stories with Nancy Grace.
Guys, we're talking about the disappearance of a little girl at a football game. Gabby Doolin. Her brother's playing football. Gabby's playing with her little friends around the bleachers where her parents are, and suddenly a child says, "Where's Gabby?" And then all H-E-L-L breaks loose. Mark Class, what I was saying is I want to tell you a true story, and I may or may not have told you this before, but John David and Lucy were 10 and a half, and I took them to their first high school football game. A friend of ours has a son in the high school band. And we went to go see that. This is not our school. Well, I let them run around with their friends, and they were supposed to report back every 20 minutes, and they were doing that. And then suddenly, they didn't do it. 20 minutes passed, then 30. When it got to 40 and they'd missed two check-ins, I thought two words: Gabby Doolin. Gabby Doolin. I took off down those bleachers like a bat out of hell, and it scared me to death, because behind the stadium at this high school game, all these parents were like they were tailgating at a professional football game, drinking and cooking out. Hey, party on all you want to, but that is not an appropriate setting for children. I started screaming, calling them, looking. I ran and got my husband. He said, "What's wrong?" I said, "Gabby Doolin, that's what's wrong. Start looking." All our friends emptied the stands. We were all looking. And I was standing in the middle of nowhere, about to start crying, and somebody tapped me on the shoulder. It was Lucy. Then I got attacked, and it was John David. She had been getting her face painted, and I guess she started right after I started looking because I went there. Long story short, that night I decided they were getting a cell phone way earlier than I wanted them to have one for the reason you just said, Mark Class. Now I got it loaded up with Life 360, Tracker, Find My iPhone, the works. Guys, take a listen to our friend, Phil Pendleton, Fox 56.
Gabby Doolin's father wanted his son, Alec, to tell us what his 7-year-old sister meant to him.
I'm going to miss her. She was always so happy about everything. No matter what was going on, she was always happy. It made everybody feel better.
The little girl was at Alec's Little League football game Saturday night when police say she disappeared from sight. 30 minutes later, she was found murdered near a creek in a wooded area behind the high school.
She loved to kill her. She loved to read.
Since her death, her community has flooded the family with support. A GoFundMe page had already raised thousands of dollars by Monday.
That means everything. Donations, we appreciate that, but I'd give anything to have my baby back.
Isn't it true to Levi Page, CrimeOnline.com investigative reporter, that within 30 minutes of her disappearing, she was dead?
Yes, so she was reported missing at 7:40 p.m., and at 8:05 p.m., she was discovered dead, face down in a creek in a wooded area behind the high school, and she was raped and strangled.
A 7-year-old little girl. To Mark Class, father of Polly Class, founder of Class Kids Foundation, what is the statistic regarding the hours that pass once a child is kidnapped?
Well, 3 hours pass. Within 3 hours, a child that's going to be murdered as a result of a kidnapping will be dead within. 76% of children that are murdered as a result of a kidnapping will be dead within the first 3 hours. So there is absolutely no time to lose, not 1 second.
Gabby Doolin was a huge inspiration when I was writing this chapter in our new book, Don't Be a Victim, Fighting Back Against America's Crime Wave. Proceeds are going to help finding missing children. We take all the cases I ever investigated or tried, prosecuted, all the cases I've covered, to create a list for you, life-saving tips to help you, you that have children that you want to protect. And in the very first chapter, I talk about protecting your child at playgrounds, parks, amusement parks, malls, ball fields. Take a listen to this.
Less than a week later, Madden was arrested and charged with murder, rape, sodomy, and kidnapping. The Doolins say Timothy had a daughter that cheered with Gabby.
She'd been around him, you know, at all the practices and the games. She would have trusted him just enough.
Now, not only does a bedroom lay empty, so does a piece of a family's heart.
I will get to hug and kiss her again. I know I will. I don't have no doubt. I miss it, man.
Now, investigators say they have DNA evidence linking Timothy Madden to Gabby Doolin's death.
To Joseph Scott Morgan, you were just hearing our friend Monique Blair at Fox 56 Lexington. What forensics led them to the father of a little girl that was a cheerleader with Gabby Doolin?
I know, Nancy, we're talking about that stuff that is the basis for all of life. That's DNA. And so that is a fingerprint that's left behind. And Nancy, he left this fingerprint of DNA behind on her person in the twinkling of an eye. That's how quickly this happened. She was raped, sodomized. She was actually strangled. And on top of that, Nancy, they found water in her lungs. She was drowned. She was held face down under the water. And that's how quickly it happened. He deposited his DNA on her, and there is some source of her left upon him, and this is a transfer of evidence. But the more important thing is this happened so quickly, and he completely destroyed this family's life.
Completely destroyed the family. from then on. The family's still destroyed. And Gabby is by far the only one to UMark class. Ballparks, amusement parks, playgrounds. It's a predator's playpen.
Well, evil exists, Nancy. And individuals with proclivities to do harm to young children are going to gravitate to places where young children are going to be, and more importantly, where young children are going to be unsupervised, and they're going to pounce upon the first opportunity they have to engage their evil intention. So again, you know, there should be maybe off-duty police officers. There should be some kind of protection at these games so that children have an ability to play and run around without being concerned that they're going to be the victim of some kind of a horrendous crime.
But in the event that there aren't off-duty cops, in the event there is no surveillance, what can you as a parent do to protect your child? I lay out pages and pages of tips to help you protect your child. Listen to Chris Conte, WTVF.
So what does justice feel like, knowing that Timothy Madden is away for life for taking this little girl's life?
I want to say, you know, that there was some kind of miraculous change, but no. I mean, in here, the hurt's still there.
If losing Gabby was the hardest day of their lives, yesterday came in a close second, as Amy finally got to speak to Timothy Madden face to face.
Because of you, we lost our baby girl. Our boys lost their sister.
And when Timothy Madden turned his attention away, well, Amy doesn't fault Gabby's dad for this.
You can let him listen to what she's got to say. Do you understand me? Do you understand me?
Mr. Doolin, Mr. Doolin.
We couldn't even get enough respect to be heard. So, yeah, he got really angry, but I don't think anybody can blame him for getting upset the way that he did.
Crime Stories with Nancy Grace.
Guys, we're talking about a little girl who goes missing at a junior league football game, Gabby Doolin. How can we stop this ever happening again? In Don't Be a Victim, Fighting Back Against America's Crime Waves, proceeds going to help find missing children. Pages and pages of tips are laid out for you. For instance, tell your children, mommy and daddy never need help outside the family. That's a common ploy. Hey, your mom says I'm to come to get you. She needs you right now. Come with me. No, never go with anyone else. Mommy and daddy don't need help. Predators at playgrounds, games, parks, listen and watch carefully. If they hear you call your child's name, they will use that as ammunition to try and get your child. Have a plan in case you get separated at one of these ballparks or parks. Don't talk to or help strangers. Hey, Gabby, I can't find my little girl. Can you help me? You know, she cheerleads with you. No. And what's so bizarre, Wendy Patrick, California prosecutor, the guy that murdered Gabby was the father of another little cheerleader. They knew him.
That's right. And as Mark Class only knows too well, sometimes it's an inside job. Sometimes kids go missing, not only from inside the house, but from at common areas where there are relatives, friends, associates, people that know the kids. And that is what's so scary about these stadiums, these sporting events. You know, we talked about Neighborhood Watch. We should have unofficial stadium watch where parents look out for each other's kids, especially if they know them. Because large sporting events, as you point out, Nancy, playgrounds for criminals who take advantage of diversion and distraction. Two elements you have present at these events where everybody's looking at the field or whatever else is going on, whatever kind of gathering it is, or God forbid, as you shared, they're drinking behind the bleachers, but they're not paying the kind of attention they should because it is often done and perpetrated by somebody known or at least recognized by the child.
Often these disappearances take place when you are at a park or a playground. The book goes on to advise, try to pick a playground that has a single entry or exit, especially one that may have a fence around it. Because what perp is going to grab your child and carry them over a fence, although it has happened? Never let the sight line between you and your child be obstructed. If possible, pick playgrounds and parks that are fenced in or contained. Try to pick play areas or areas where you can easily see who is approaching. Another issue to you, Karen Stark, is you've got to instruct your child. It's not rude to say, no, I'm not going with you to your car. No, I'm not going to go to the concession stand with you. Or just plain out, no. Especially in the South, children are taught to be polite. But you've got to train your child to scream, yell, kick, fight, no.
Unfortunately, Nancy, it's a very strong no, and children have to be taught very literally. If somebody is offering you a candy, if they have a toy, if they say the dog, I mean, you have to give specific examples. And the other thing is that parents need to watch if children are playing together, because there's a false sense of security that they're playing tag, hide and seek, they're in each other's faces. No, that's not okay. You have to keep your eye on your child. Unfortunately, that's just the way the world is.
Here's another case that I investigated to write, Don't Be a Victim. Does this name ring a bell? Morgan Nick. Take a listen to our friends at KLRT Fox 16 Little Rock.
June 9th, 1995. Six-year-old Morgan Nick was at an Alma Little League ballpark. She went to the parking lot with two friends to chase fireflies. When she didn't come back, her friends say they saw her talking to a bearded man next to a red camper. That man was never identified. Morgan was last seen emptying sand out of her shoes near her mother's car.
I thought when the police got there, I thought that they would know what to do, that they would figure this out, that we would have Morgan back right away. It never crossed my mind that we would be here even a day later.
It's a night that shook Arkansans to the core. So many in the state searching, praying, and hoping for any answer to bring Morgan home.
And to Dennis Farina of Unsolved Mysteries, listen.
I went over to the car, looked around the outside of the car, opened the doors, looked inside the car thinking she had gotten in. Even at one point, looked under the car just thinking she has to be here somewhere. And within a couple of minutes, all the people and most of the cars were gone, and it was very clear that Morgan wasn't there.
I can't believe that little girl.
Calm down. Where was the last place you saw her?
One of the coaches questioned the two girls.
With these little girls.
Girls, look at me. When you were in the field, were you there alone?
They remembered seeing a man whom they describe as creepy talking to Morgan out in the field.
I'm going to go call 911, okay?
Thank you.
One of the coaches had a cell phone and made the initial 911 call to law enforcement. They arrived within 6 minutes and began an immediate and massive search for Morgan that night.
But they found no trace of Morgan. The media was alerted and flyers were posted. Weeks stretched into months and finally years with no sign of Morgan Nick.
To special guest Levi Page, CrimeOnline.com investigative reporter, how did Morgan Nick go missing?
So, Nancy, Morgan Nix was 7 years old, and she was abducted in 1996 at a Little League game in Alma, Arkansas. And Alma, Arkansas is in northwest Arkansas, Nancy. It's in the Ozark Mountains, a very quiet, small town, population of about 5,000 people. And she was at a game with her family, a Little League game. And at 10:30 p.m., she asked her mom, hey, can I go catch lightning bugs with my friends? Her mom said, yeah, go ahead. So she was doing that with her friends. And at 10:45, 15 minutes later, she was seen by her friends emptying sand out of her shoes and talking to a person that her friends described as a creepy man driving a red truck with a white camper, and that was the last time that she was ever seen.
Crime Stories with Nancy Grace.
Guys, take a listen to our friend Dennis Farina.
Alma, Arkansas. On a summer night, Colleen Nick took her 6-year-old daughter Morgan to a Little League baseball
game. We'd made the choice to go, just Morgan and I, just to have girls' night out. And it was such a warm, close, fun night.
To catch some fireflies?
Yeah. Well, I don't know if my mom will let me.
Two local girls asked Morgan to come play with them.
Mom, can me and my friends go catch fireflies?
Oh, I don't think so, honey.
Are you sure it's safe?
Sure.
Finally, against my better judgment, I told her that she could go and play. And she threw her arms around my neck, gave me a big hug.
Stay where I can see you.
She's naked.
We could see them very clearly, and then the last time that I turned to look, Morgan was running back and forth playing.
But when the game ended, the two girls returned to the field without Morgan.
Girls, where's Morgan?
Why, a car getting the sand out of her shoe.
Which car?
I don't know, yours, I guess.
Can you imagine the feeling that mom had when she realized Morgan is gone? The purpose of this is not to scare you at all. The purpose is to arm you. In a world when everything seems like it's upside down between crime statistics and protests and COVID, that feeling of helplessness, of not being able to do anything to make a difference, can be overwhelming. This book, Don't Be a Victim, is full of information to arm you to protect yourself and your family. We were just telling you about the case of Morgan Nix. An entire chapter is devoted to cases just like this, true cases. Not to exploit the cases, but to determine what, if anything, can we learn? How can we use this knowledge so another child doesn't go missing, another child isn't harmed or killed? Take a listen to this.
It was an unseasonably warm Monday, February 13th, 2017. There was no school that day, and 13-year-old Abby Williams had spent the night with her best friend, 14-year-old Libby German. The teens decided to hike on the popular heritage trails east of Delphi. Libby's older sister, Kelsey German, drops them off at 1:35 p.m. with plans to meet later to be picked up. German leaves them at the trail near the scenic Monenheim Bridge. It's an abandoned railroad bridge over Deer Creek. At 2:07 p.m., Libby posts a photo to Snapchat of Abby walking across the bridge. When the girls fail to show up at the appointed time and place and family can't find them, they are reported missing. Carroll County Sheriff Toby Leesenby organizes search parties, which continue until just before midnight. Leesenby then issues a news release saying there's no reason to suspect foul play or to believe the girls are in immediate danger.
You know, to you, Mark Class, father of Polly Class and victims' rights champion, he has devoted his life to helping find missing people, especially children, after his daughter Polly was kidnapped from her own home. You know, Mark Class, why do we lull ourselves into a false sense of complacency? Because you heard the Morgan Nix story. It was mom and daughter at a Little League game, and she was right by the bleachers catching fireflies. In the Delphi case, Abby and Libby are just walking a trail. There are plenty of people around. It's a very small town, very low crime rate. Polly was at a little sleepover. She's having a little sleepover in her own home when she went missing. Why do we think it won't happen to us?
Yeah, that's a spectacular question. You know, Colleen Nick is a dear friend of mine. She has also become a fierce advocate for missing children. And in fact, the Amber Alert in Arkansas is named after little Morgan Nick. It happens to all of us, Nancy. I mean, we look at the stories that we're talking about, and we go, oh, my goodness, well, at least I've told my child about stranger danger, so that certainly is never going to happen to me. And it's really, really important to teach your children about the child lures. and teach your children about the strangers. But as has been pointed out, as often as not, in fact, much more often than not, it's somebody that is known within the family. And I think it's a mistake to put the whole burden of child safety on the shoulders of the children. They're little kids. They definitely have to know the rules. They definitely have to be aware of what's going on around them. But nonetheless, they are children. They're more easily deceived than adults are. So we have to create strategies that are going to work at the adult level to be able to protect the children. And I think we've discussed a lot of those this evening, because so many of these little kids, unfortunately, do fall through the cracks. So we have to be vigilant on every level. We have to talk to the children, but we also have to take responsibility on our own shoulders as adults to ensure that our children are going to be safe from the potential predators that might be on the streets.
Again, I'm not trying to scare you, I'm trying to help you and arm you with information. You know, I'm trying to figure out, Karen Stark, you're the psychologist, you're the high-profile shrink joining us out of Manhattan. Why do we choose, including me, choose to live very often in complacency? I mean, you know, I didn't realize I was going to share this story with you because it just happened last night. But Lucy looked at me and she said, did you put a chip in me, Mom? I said, what? She says, do I have a chip? So you can find me if I go missing? Like, is it my tooth? Did I swallow it? What? I'm like, Lucy, why would you think you've got a chip in you? And she goes, well, I know, I just, you know, I think you put a chip in me because you're so worried about me all the time. I don't want them to be scared, Karen. It's just, you know, it's hard to live in a state of fear and readiness all the time. Is that why we let ourselves, you know, slip into complacency? I mean,
that's true, Nancy. They didn't do anything wrong, and it would be terrible if we blamed the parents in this situation. And the problem is not the parents or the children. It's that the world contains evil people, that this exists. And you have to alert your children, and you really have to be vigilant. And there's nothing we can do about that. Yes, they might be worried about it and they think that you're overdoing it, like Lucy. Maybe she thinks she has a chip. But the truth of the matter is, children need to be prepared. Parents need to be prepared. If you can't help it, you have to say it's not okay. You have to give them a little bit of fear because you don't want them to trust strangers. That's just not all right.
With me, 33 years, Seattle PD, author of Seattle's Forgotten Serial Killer, Gary Jean Grant. You can find him at cloydsteiger.com. Cloyd Steiger, I want you to take a listen to what Libby's grandmother, Becky, told me.
Did you realize something was not right at all?
Well, our whole family was out there looking. We all left. Tara, my daughter, went straight over there. Derek was there. My other son come pulling in as I was leaving, and he said, what are you doing? I said, we're going to go look for the girls. So he jumped in the car with me. We drove. If they would have decided to walk home, we drove both directions that they would have gone, both routes. We got there. We had six cars there. We were taking over everything. We split up. We walked all the trails. Cody and Kelsey went across the bridge. They went across and up to the road and up to the houses up there.
Were the sheriffs there yet?
Not yet. By this time, it was a little after 5.
Was it getting dark yet?
Not yet, it wasn't, but I knew it was going. And I was on the phone most of the time with AT&T, trying to get them to ping her phone, and they won't do it.
Why is it that the cell phone companies will not ping when the parent calls and asks them to?
Well, you know, that's it's an issue that comes up a lot. Normally now, if the police call and declare an emergency, most cell phone companies will ping the phone. But, you know, there's so much complication. If you're the owner of the phone, I don't know why the phone, cell phone company won't ping it for you. It's ridiculous. It's just a policy that they have. But they
insane.
Have been pretty good by police.
It's red tape. And it, looking back, I don't know if it would have helped in this case, but there are cases that it does help in. And Cloyd, I want you to take a listen to something else the family told me.
They were dropped off Monday by a family member. They had a plan. They were
supposed to meet that family member a few hours later. They had a time, they had a location where they were supposed to meet, and those girls never showed up, and that family member immediately alerted authorities, and the search efforts were underway. And when we say search efforts, we mean hundreds of people were out in that wooded area looking for these girls, scouring the area for any clues. Social media took off. Pictures of these girls were circulating social media. Anyone who knew anything, they were just begging them to come forward, to call police. And I think everyone went to sleep Monday night, keeping their fingers crossed that there was maybe some kind of miscommunication or the girls were going to be hanging out somewhere else.
We automatically try, our mind goes to innocent explanations as to why something horrible has happened. But Cloyd, very often victims' families have told me they knew immediately that something horrible had happened. Have you ever heard that, Cloyd?
I have. You know, and I think it's an innate sense that a parent has that is not just, you know, worry. And let me add, I think it was a huge mistake for that sheriff to make an announcement saying, we don't suspect foul play. You don't know. Leave it open. Just say, we're doing everything we can to find these girls. But don't go out there and say, we don't suspect foul play, because then everybody else says, oh, it's nothing. They just ran away or something, and they're not alert. So that was really a bad move.
Guys, Abby and Libby's bodies were found just below the trestle bridge where they were taking pictures that they posted. Dead. Again, these true fact scenarios are not to scare you. They are to arm you with information that may one day save your child, your grandchild, a child you love. Don't be a victim. Fight back against America's crime wave. Nancy Grace, Crime Stories, signing off. Goodbye, friend.
You're listening to an iHeart podcast.